and welcome to episode 11 of The Two Tones. Tony DeVolfo.
How are you, Tone?
Good. Myself, Tony Moclair.
Episode 11. One of my favourite numbers, Tone. Would you care to rattle off some of your favourites in 1-1?
Come on, the great Earl Spalding.
B-Dool.
Oh, B-Dool. Jeez, yes.
And I, for the record, should get this right. The late Laurie Kerr, who I suggested wore 9 a couple of weeks ago, actually wore number 11. And how he would have been happy looking down on his grandson, Patrick, making his senior debut for the Blues on Sunday was probably one of the few shining lights in an otherwise forgettable afternoon, Tone.
Indeed. It was a long, painful afternoon for Carlton supporters. Let's be honest about that. Three quarters of it was. We were in it till the first quarter, but I'd never actually realised this before, Tone. What twists the knife even more is when your opposition is just raining goals, the quarters go longer.
They do drag.
So that final siren would just not come. And I don't know where we start. We're not going to dwell on this. We know Bolts has asked the players to seriously think about this game. We're going to cover it off now, but there's not really that many highlights to highlight.
I know your thinking, Tone, because there were moments, so I have to admit, last week where I was thinking of the mercy rule and whether it could be invoked halfway through the third quarter. I thought we were probably flattered on the scoreboard by Melbourne early. Melbourne were all over us and perhaps didn't take its chances at that point of the game, but I think after half time, when the first two goals were kicked in pretty rapid succession by the Demons,
I think in just over a minute,
just completely fell away. And as the coach, suggested in no uncertain terms afterwards, that's a sort of performance that is un-Carlton-like and cannot be accepted. So it's a question of how the team reacts this week. That's the most important thing down at the Cattery.
Well, yes, we'll get to previewing that in a moment, but if we just cover off a few things that we did see. You did mention Pat Kerr's debut.
Lovely to see Patrick Kerr out there, his first game for the Carlton Football Club. He's looking fine federally. I had an opportunity to speak to him prior to the match, and he's a lovely fellow, Patrick, and he was talking about how he had basically changed his body shape, you know, to come to terms with the rigours of senior league football.
And, he looks like a big unit.
He's a big unit, all right. And it was lovely to see him out there. And I actually had the opportunity to photograph him and his father, Steve, and members of the Kerr clan afterwards for posterity. I know his grandmother, Vivian, number one female ticket holder of the Carlton Football Club, was at the game to see her grandson play. So the Kerrs have been a magnificent Carlton clan, and it was great to see history in the making again with Patrick Kerr running out for the Old Dark Navy Blues. And what I really like about Patrick Kerr, Tone, is that because of his background, his family history, he has a great empathy for the Carlton story, and he is interested in the history of the club. And it's always been a pleasure for me to talk to him because he has that empathy for the Carlton club, and he is blue, true and true.
Well, we just hope he's all here for that. The journey that we're all on, the journey of 1,000 miles, it does seem. There is the odd pothole along the way. Let's always remember that. Tone, you were there at the ground in another capacity.
I was indeed, Tone. I had the great pleasure of actually conducting the first Boundary by Blue tour, which was actually a very leisurely lap of the boundary line of the Melbourne Cricket Ground, probably about 3/4 an hour before the first bounce. I actually took around a gentleman named James Price and his two children, Charlie and Pippa, and we took that sentimental journey around the boundary line, revisiting great moments in time. And if you think about the Carlton story, what a glorious story it is, predominantly at the Melbourne Cricket Ground. You think about what's happened in the past, 16 of Carlton's premierships have been won at that ground. The bloodbath was won here.
Yeah.
But to celebrate moments in time, like, the Jezelenko mark on the wing, and, by the Sir Edward Hopkins Memorial Interchange Bench, to walk in the shadows of where Skinny Lappin took Mark of the Year, against Essendon, where Andrew Walker flew and where Silvani flew.
Yeah.
Just great to revisit these moments. You know, the Harms lunge and thump to Ken Sheldon in 79. it was a nice moment, Tone, when we were traversing the boundary, and there was someone from the air on the AFL member side. Hey, Tony. And I looked around, and it was Luke Livingston. Ah, 46 game, yeah. Great, the boy from Kerrang with his two kids.
Lovely.
Taking their places in the stands. They came down and were photographed with the Price family. It was just a lovely moment. We got around to see Jeff Southby ring the old time bell.
Yeah.
And then we saw the players run out from on the deck. And it was just a magnificent moment. You know, to James and the Price clan, thank you for the opportunity to take you around. It was a great privilege, and I hope that I might be able to afford other Carlton members the same service of taking them on that very sentimental journey of the paddock that grew.
Now, Livingston, of course, wore the number 4 for the Carlton Football Club, if you don't mind. That's a very prestigious number. Tone, how do we get Boundary by Blue tickets?
Well, those that may be interested can contact the club, I'm sure, through the membership department, I would have thought. There's probably another opportunity, maybe two, for tours later in the year at the MCG. So those interested, please feel free to contact the club, and we'll see if we can accommodate you on that wonderful, wonderful walk of the old ground at Jolimont.
Now, one thing before I get your votes for the for Saturday's game, my explanation that the boys were just so fixated and preoccupied by the upcoming royal wedding that maybe they just forgot the basics of structure and skill. But I want to know, can you explain this? Because I was watching it and I didn't quite understand it. Harry's set shot on goal where he kicked the ball into Gawn, and I thought, well, it's just not going to go our way. But then there was some sort of reversal. And was he given a 50-metre penalty?
He was indeed.
Can you explain that?
I can only presume that Max Gawn encroached over the mark.
Okay.
And so was pulled back to the goal line. It's the only explanation I can give that Harry had a shot.
Yeah.
Gawn encroached over the mark and was promptly penalised 50 metres.
I will say, I mean, one thing that came out of Saturday, Harry's ability to clunk them is Levi-esque.
Well, it is. Although, you know, you would have to say perhaps another year or two in the gym is going to certainly help Harry's cause. But, yeah, look, you're right. The way he can clunk them, but also I love the way he moves, and he's a very, very good kick for goal.
Yeah.
He's got a beautiful, fluent kicking action. And when he's got it, you actually fancy him, you know, with it, that he's going to lodge the 6 points for the team. You know, you get glimpses of players like Harry McKay and Fisher, you know, Paddy Dow and O'Brien. I suppose we're seeing glimpses. We're not seeing, you know, four quarters to be expected, you know, players of these tender years. And I must admit, when I was watching the game, you know, to me it seemed like boys to men because, you know, you look at the Melbourne midfield and fellows like, you know, Bernie Vincent, Petrarca and Lewis, Jack Viney back first game.
Yeah.
They've got a fairly hard edge to them, that midfield. And we've got quite a young core around the ball. Admittedly, Paddy Cripps is a contested ball and all. But losing Ed Curnow, I think, really hurt at the weekend. We need all our hard nuts around the footy up and running. So thankfully, we get Ed back this week.
I'm into that. His loss really did stick out in that kind of torrid struggle where he just would have, you know, come to the fore and served Carlton brilliantly. Tone, I'm just going to, before we get to the votes, a moment that stands out to me, Daisy getting knocked to the ground like a jack-in-the-box straight back up.
Well, actually,
how do you like that?
It was pretty impressive. And
it was.
I must say, it's been hard to find positive press anywhere outside these walls through the course of 2018, Tone. But credit where credit's due. I saw one of the programs, may have been on the 7 Network this week, where Dale Thomas was commended for doing just that, springing back to his feet.
Yeah.
Didn't stage for free.
Yeah.
And all power to Dale Thomas. He took the knock. He got up straight away and butted up for the next contest. He's had a great year.
Yeah.
And we need players like him leading the way. All power to Daisy. That was a great moment, I thought, in the game.
Yeah.
One of the few.
Well, true, but it just really stood out. I thought that's who he is. Mm. Tone, you have the onerous job, as you do week in, week out. Some weeks are harder than others, and I imagine this week is possibly the hardest you've had all year. Nonetheless, let's not dwell on it. The 3-2-1s, please, for the Carlton-Melbourne game. Melbourne beating Carlton by 109 points.
Thank you very much, Tony. Well, I gave one vote to a play that probably doesn't get the plaudits of others, of his contemporaries, and that was Nick Graham, a fellow that, you know, has been called up and has had to really do it the hard way. Spent a lot of time in the seconds trying to, you know, eke his way to senior level. And I thought he was commendable the way he went about his business and worked hard for the team. The man in question we just spoke about a moment ago, Dale Thomas, I gave two votes to him. He's had a great year for the club, his best year, obviously, since his crossing of Elgin Street to the Paris end of the thoroughfare. And three votes I gave to Patrick Cripps. I thought Patrick Cripps, you know, again, flew the flag. Yeah, poor old Murph, you know, looks like he suffered a relapse of the injury that kept him out for a month.
Yeah.
And Patrick Cripps obviously had to, you know, carry the can, I suppose. And, you know, his hardness of the ball is to be admired. And it was great to see him say through the course of the week that he wants to be committed to the club as a Carlton player. And aren't we lucky that we've got him? A great Carlton footballer, Patrick Cripps.
I would imagine if he did announce an intention to leave, every Carlton member, all 50,000 odd plus, would barricade the exit at Icon Park, I would hope, and prevent that from happening.
You'd be there, Tone.
I would be.
With your pitchfork and your flame torch.
And a burning stick, exactly. Before we move on to previewing the Geelong game, Tone, Sir Swamp Thing...
Yes, a prognosticator of Swamp Thing.
Yeah, he knows what he's on about. Could you tell us who has taken the fewest games to rack up 1,000 contested possessions?
You put me on the spot here, but I note that Sir Swamp Thing cites Mr. Patrick Cripps, Esquire, as the man.
How about that? In 68 games, it's taken him Josh Kennedy, whoever he is, 79.
Incredible. It is incredible, really, when you think about it. You know, the thing you do hope with Cripps is that, you know, we need players like Kennedy and those hard nuts.
Yeah.
And Kerno's the other one, around the ball to lend support. Because my personal fear with a player like Patrick Cripps is that, you know, the way he plays, that, you know, does he have a finite time in the game because of it, you know? So I think he is as good as he is, and he obviously relishes the contested ball. We have to be very mindful of the physical toll that style of game exacts.
Well, you look at how bedeviled Koutafidis was with injuries, and he not dissimilar style of play. He was as physical and just as athletic, so that's something obviously that needs to be well monitored.
Very true.
Just in terms of injury tone. Charlie Kurnow, tight quad, he's a test. We would imagine that he would play. Marchbank might be after a bye next week. Levi, broken rib, still after the bye. And Alex Silvani, oh God, please, please, he's how far off?
Well, they're saying 1 week with the Achilles. You know, we talk about hard nuts, players, and he's a player that leads by example. You know, a player that really inspires, and a player that really he really plays for keeps. And we have sorely missed his presence across halfback, no doubt about it. Be great to see him back in the team, Tony, but more importantly, getting a consistent run at it, because it seems it's obviously so frustrating for him that just when he gets back, something else goes wrong. We just hope that he gets it right, because we need him there, and he's a very important player for the club.
Now, Tone, history of sorts is being made next week when Carlton goes down to Cardinia Park. It's the first time in how many years? This I found amazing.
It's 21 years since Carlton Geelong last met at the venue, which is hard to believe. And during the week, Tone, I decided to delve into the the annals of history and look at Carlton Geelong matches at Cardinia Park. And it rather staggered me that the first time the two teams played there, given that both Carlton and Geelong, you know, were 150 years old, first time they met at Cardinia Park was 1944.
Wow.
The reason being was that in 41, Geelong relocated from Corio Oval to Cardinia Park.
Okay.
that particular year, Carlton Geelong met once, and it was here at Princes Park, so the opportunity to play at the ground was lost. And then in 42 and 43, Geelong went into recess because of the Second World War. In those days, there was restrictions on travel even to play football. So obviously Geelong were really caught out by wartime regulations. So the club went into recess for 42 and 43, and it wasn't until 44 that Carlton Geelong met for the first time at Cadinia Park. And the interesting thing about Cadinia Park and Carlton's record is that of the current venues at which it plays, Cadinia Park is the only only ground where Carlton has a superior win-loss ratio. It's 23 wins from 42 starts. So we are in the black at Cadinia Park. But it's really fascinating to go through some of the games that have been played down there. I took the liberty to look at those 42 games this week. It's on the Carlton website.
Excellent. CarltonFC.com.au.
Yes, thank you. And some amazing matches. Stephen Kernahan kicked 8 in a game down there. The same day, Peter Satori kicked 7. So that's probably that glory period. I think it was late 80s that it happened. We had a fellow whose name escapes me for Carlton now. I think his name was Rogers, fullback. Cop 8 weeks at the tribunal for kicking Doug Wade, the Geelong full forward. Other moments that have been interesting, I was at this particular game in 1989 when Gary Ablett Sr. almost killed Wayne Johnson with a hip and shoulder that collected him under the armpit. And I think I was speaking to the Dominator the other night, he received cracked ribs in that incident and ruptured the lining of his spleen. Lost enormous quantities of blood as a consequence and didn't play for about 2 months. So there's been some really interesting games down at the Cattery. Not so sure that Saturday night's such a fair thing for Carlton people. It's interesting, Tone, when the comment goes up about the old Princes Park ground as a prospective AFL venue.
Yeah.
The knock on it always seems to be that Carlton has outgrown the place, that it plays in front of 40,000 plus crowds. Well, the ground formerly known as Cadinia Park has a capacity of 34,000.
Mm.
So why on that basis is Carlton even venturing into the Geelong South region?
Yeah,
got me tossed.
It's a good point. And then you look at the ratio of hometown fans to visitors, and it's obviously, it makes the place a cauldron.
It does. It does indeed. But, you know, I suppose we have to mount the argument that we're deserving of playing at bigger venues. And, we at this club have to start turning it around on field to mount the claim for the bigger places. And, may it happen sooner rather than later, Tate.
Well, yes, but we look, it's going to be a tough challenge. It's actually, you mentioned Gary Ablett's first game of his son back in the Geelong jumper at Cadinia Park this week. They're coming off a loss to Essendon.
Yep.
They are going to be fired up.
Well, they are.
Tommy Hawkins, so I guess so long as Tom Hawkins and the Kernos can keep their hands off the umpires, we'll have a match.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I would think they'd be in a reasonable frame of mind, the Kernos, too, Tone, because I would imagine that the Kernos will make the trek to the old Cadinia ground from Belbray, which is just up the road from their hometown. So it'll be a nice leisurely little drive for them down to the Cattery from the hometown of Belbray.
Now, so obviously they're back. That's going to change the complexion of the side, as opposed to the one that played Melbourne. Nonetheless, Adelaide and, Geelong. And I'd recommend anybody have a look at the Geelong website. In terms of editorial slanted, it is exceedingly fair. I was very impressed by their match preview of the game against Carlton. And they, as they pointed out, they are primed, ready to go. And unfortunately for Carlton, we might be meeting them when they're loaded for bear, as they say.
That said, Tony, and I know where you're coming from. You would expect a Carlton team to come out, with smoke emanating from their nostrils this week. After, you know, if, I don't know if you saw the footage of Coach Bolton at three-quarter time last week, but he didn't miss anyone. And so you'd like to think that, the opportunity to atone will be taken, you know, and that what we see this week is a committed showing through four quarters of a Carlton team that, that runs out onto onto the old Geelong ground.
Now, are we going to see Murphy back, or is he that injury is serious enough to have him sidelined again?
I think he's got to be in a little bit of bother.
Yeah.
You know, just hasn't unfortunately been able to get the foot right. So I suspect there'll be a change. We don't know for sure yet, but you know, there's every chance that he may not take his place this week. So yes, there will be changes to the team, obviously, and whoever gets the call up for the 22 is just going to have to be on song and ready for this game, because as you say, in Geelong, Carlton meets a really committed team on the rebound on their home dig, so it's an enormous challenge to say the least.
Just from a logistical point of view and tickets, how do you actually get into, I mean, do you need to contact the friendly neighbourhood scalper?
Do you know, it's been 21 years, so who would know? It's a great question.
Go along to Bass or, or Alan's Music and or maybe get one there.
They maybe the old days, you know, when they had the stubs in the members tickets you pull out and give to the bloke at the gate, you know. It's been a long time, you know. Yeah. It's a funny thing in that story that I wrote about the history of Canidia Park, I rang Mark McClure because Mark McClure had some great, struggles down there. In actual fact, I could recall reading about games in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s where Mario Bortolotto had his measure playing as centre back for Geelong. And, of course, Mario would later see the light and play in two premierships for the Carlton Club. But I asked Mark McClure about his thoughts on Canidia Park and Geelong as he remembered. And he said, "Love the place, love playing there. It was a great ground." He said, "But what I loved most was the bus trip down." And he said, "With the players." And he said, "Yes, after a hard-earned win, there were the occasional beers to be had on the way home." He said, "Why not?" He said, "That was exactly the way to be." He said, "There was a great camaraderie and a real rapport amongst the players." Leaving the Carlton ground en masse on the bus to get down there, do the job, and celebrate a great win on the way home. So. You can imagine what that would have been like. Wouldn't you have loved to have been on that bus trip with Perovic and Sellers and Alexander Marcou and Palms and JB? Great days.
All right. Well, speaking of which, Tone, players who have played for Geelong and then ended up at Carlton, Adrian Hickmont comes to mind.
Great player, Hickey. And his son has been touted. One of his sons has touted as a potential draftee. I think he's eligible for this year's national draft. So I suspect Carlton will be in a position to nominate Hickey's boy as a potential father-son if they go that way.
Great.
Mario Bortolotto's another classic example. David Clark was a great player for Geelong and was probably as close as any man will ever get to playing in a grand final. You recall him and Mark Azzani running onto the ground on grand final day 1982. Only to run up the race after standing for the national anthem. How cruel is that?
Oh, that's a...
But David Clark was one of those players that was in that horrible situation, but that is really taking one for the team, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've had, a lot of good players. Probably now you think of Zach Tui and Lockie down there in the reverse.
You can throw Mick Mansfield in there.
If you go back further, Tony, there was a player, and I mentioned Geelong being in recess in 42-43, there was a very good player for Geelong named George Neal, who through that period was given special dispensation to play for Carlton. And he was a very good player for the Carlton Football Club through that period. And if memory serves, he went back to Geelong after the restriction was lifted. So wartime, fascinating period of history.
Yeah. Okay, was it papal dispensation or what sort, Tone?
I don't know if the ill papa's blessing was conveyed on that instance, Tone, but...
Because we know the old dark navy
the
12 blue...
was laid low around about 42-43.
I'd like to think the Pope at the time was wearing an old dark navy blue jumper under the vestments, Tone. Now, all right, so that is game time, 7:25 Saturday night.
Saturday night, so... I suspect if you're a Carlton supporter journeying down, maybe if it isn't booked out, you know, grab a bunk at the Norlane Hotel or something, yeah, and maybe stay overnight because it's probably going to be a late finish. I don't know what the weather forecast is at this stage, Tone, but to all Carlton supporters, if you're making your way down, just be very careful, drive safely. And let's hope, Tone, that we come back with the biggies.
Well, exactly, that the team are fired off after Bolt spray and after the considered study and appraisal of last week's effort. We'd love to see a contest, that's for sure. Can we also just say, I'm just going to say thank you to our producer, Lucy Jamison, but also a very big thank you to Luca Ganano, who has left the club this week. Luca was instrumental in starting the Two Tones and the podcast at this club about five years ago with Lucy's brother, Michael Jamison. So, Luca, best of luck in all endeavours. He's a great Carlton man, and thanks for all your great work.
Well said, Tony. I think when Luca Ganano came to the club, I don't think I knew how to send an email.
Yeah.
But he's, as you said, been such a pioneer in terms of what Carlton has achieved in terms of digital media.
Yep.
He was really the brainchild of the Ghost of Princes Park. Had a great empathy for that, and I'm grateful to him for it. A great Carlton person.
Yeah.
Person who barracks for the Blues and has a great empathy for the club.
He's got a fantastic football brain, just quietly.
Yes, sorry to see him go, but he's that sort of fellow that will acquit himself well in whatever he does. And he won't be totally lost to the club. He's told me that, you know, we'll be catching up on the concourse at more than the occasional Carlton game. So
all right, good
all
work.
The best to you, Luca.
Good on you, Luca. This has been the Two Tones. We will catch you next week.